the man behind Crosstown Traffic, the ultimate Jimi Hendrix tour, that is, Stephen Chanel, is on the line now. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Robert. How are you doing?
Yeah, very good indeed. Is it really 50 years since the death of Jimi Hendrix?
It is actually 50 years today, in fact.
Wow.
Nobody actually knows for sure when he actually died, but we would have been going literally now, actually. He was struggling between the early hours of the morning, so... Yeah, very, very sad story, Robert. I mean, I know it's not really your thing, because I'm an avid listener of your show, but I think you would understand, and I hope, well, you do understand, that it's a massive, massive part of London history.
Oh, absolutely, and a massive part of rock and roll history as well. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, because I've been doing, I mean, I decided to do this tour, obviously, to coincide with the anniversary. But I've been running tours. I'm a cab driver, but my I was employed in the music industry for 25 years.
Right.
So I was a record rep for Warner Brothers in the 1990s. And then I worked for the BBC for 10 years, Robert.
Oh, did you? I'll end up in a cab. You wait.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I worked for Demon. Do you know Demon Music?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I literally was based about 600 yards from the seat you're sitting in. I was at Foley Street over at BBC Worldwide.
Brilliant. Well, look, let's get back to Jimi Hendrix. So it's 50 years ago today that his life sadly ended. And although he was an American artist, it kind of all really happened here in a very condensed space of time, didn't it?
It did, yeah. It was literally 4 years. He landed from New York on the 24th of September 1966, and just over 4 years until he passed obviously away in September 1970, he literally set the world on fire. I mean, he just grew into this phenomenon. Only really had three albums, Robert, as you probably know, Are You Experienced, X's Bold of Love and Electric Ladyland.
Okay, so where does the tour take us?
Well, the tour starts actually in Hammersmith, just off the A4. Are you familiar with Zoot Mooney or Zoot Money?
I know who Zoot Money is, yeah.
Yeah, well, Zoot Money, believe it or not, he was he had a band called Zoot Money's Big Roll Band, and they were the residents at the Flamingo Club. And Chas Chandler, who was Jimi Hendrix's manager, was very friendly with Zoot because the animals had so Zoot actually supported the animals on the last US tour. So Zoot had this property in Hammersmith, which was literally the go-to for a whole scene. You know, it had wild parties and everything else which went with it. And Chas Chandler, who was the manager of Jimi Hendrix, decided to show off Jimmy straight away. So he takes Jimmy from the airport, and it took a long time to actually get Jimmy through the airport because obviously in those days there was a lot tighter restrictions. And he turns up at this house in Hammersmith, and there's literally a party going on. And he introduces Jimmy to all the friends and everything else that goes with it. And then decides to go to the Scottish St. James that very evening. Do you know the Scottish St. James?
I do. I went to a birthday party there about 18 months ago. So it's still going.
Yeah. Because so he turns up at the Scottish St. James and then just picks up a guitar from the band who were actually playing at the Scottish St. James. And completely wows, you know, just steps into the Scotch and just completely wows the audience. And then we move off. We go to the High Park Towers Hotel, the former High Park Towers Hotel.
Yeah.
And then we move on to, now, you must have gone to the Marquee Club, wouldn't you, Robert, yeah?
Yeah, I went to, well, I don't know if it was the original one. The original one was on Oxford Street, wasn't it? But I went to the
one. Yeah, it was, yeah.
I went to the one all the time on Wardour Street, yeah.
Yeah, I bet you did. Now, did you go to the Speakeasy, Robert?
I think I went to the Speakeasy once, but let's just say the night was a little hazy.
It's a Speakeasy now.
It kind of lasted into the punk days, but only just.
Indeed.
I'm pretty certain that I saw the guy from Thin Lizzy there, the lead singer.
Phil Lynott,
kind of wouldn't have existed without Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you're a very lucky man, mate, because I'm a little bit younger than you, and I missed the Speakeasy, but there's some legendary stories. There was a famous one where apparently Jimmy made the play for Marianne Faithfull in front of Mick Jagger, and this comes out in Marianne Faithfull's book. And apparently Marianne Faithfull says it's the worst mistake she ever made. Yeah, so we literally, I mean, what I try to do with the tour also is I try to do it in chronological order. So we start obviously where he lands, and he starts becoming obviously making this way through London. And then we go on to one of my favourite ones is actually Ringo Starr's house. Now, he actually rented Ringo Starr's property off Ringo Starr.
Where was that?
And that is up in Montague Square. You know, there's actually a blue plaque. There's a John Lennon and Yoko Ono blue plaque on the wall.
Right.
Because it's where John and Yoko first lived. But previously, Ringo only had the flat for approximately about 3 or 4 months. Then he moved to Surrey with John Lennon, to be next door to John Lennon. And he rented the apartment to Jimi Hendrix. And that's where Jimi actually wrote the Wind Cries Mary. And it's also where he got evicted because they took some acid, apparently, and threw whitewash all over the walls. So Ringo Starr had to evict him in the end. But then we obviously know... Have you been to the Hendrix Museum, Robert?
No, I haven't, no.
Yeah,
because it's next to the Handel Museum, isn't it?
It is. Well, that is the wonderful story, is that when Jimmy, because one of Jimmy's girlfriends, a girl called Kathy Etchingham, and Kathy and Jimmy lived in an apartment right next door to Handel's, and they've turned it into this amazing museum. And they've literally recreated the way it used to be when he lived there in 1968-69.
So do you get to go into any of these places, or are you just sitting outside in the cab? How does it work?
Well, we sit. I mean, obviously, with a lot of them, we sit outside in the cab. But we're obviously with the Hendrix Museum. We actually go into the museum, you see.
Right.
So yeah. And I mean, have you heard of the Bag of Nails, Robert?
Yep. I don't know where it is, but I've heard of the Bag. Was it the Bag of Nails? Was it in Kingly Street?
It was on Kingly Street. Yeah. It's now a private members a club called the Court.
Right.
And that's, we haven't got any access to it. But I was actually there at a private event before lockdown. And when you go into the Bag of Nails, it's amazing because the stage is kind of exactly where it used to be. And this is where Chas Chandler decided to launch Jimmy in November 1966. And it was just full of all the glitterati of the pop world. So John Lennon was there, Paul McCartney was there, Mick Jagger was there, you know, Jimmy Page, all the glitterati who literally stood there with their chins on the floor thinking about how good this guy is, you know.
How long does the tour last in total?
Well, it lasts about 3 hours, but I do say to people, look, you know, I'm going to take this nice and easy, and if it goes on for more than 3 hours, then so be it. So but there's no, I mean, as I said, it's 15 landmarks, so it goes into a lot of detail. And we obviously end up at 22 Lansdowne Crescent, where he died, obviously, today.
Wow.
Do you know Lansdowne Crescent?
No, I know roughly where it is, but I don't know the street.
Yeah, well, if you head along Westbourne Grove, you keep going Westbourne Grove over Portobello Road, and then Westbourne Grove actually becomes Lansdowne Crescent.
Right.
And it's a property on the right-hand side. It's 22 Lansdowne Crescent. I am going to go, as soon as I've stopped speaking to you, I'm going to go up there and see if there's any fans, because I think there will be a lot of people up there today, actually. And but the problem is, the guy who actually owns owns the house now wants absolutely nothing to do with it. So he's probably going to open his shutters and see about 150 people on the street outside.
So this tour, it's not just a one-off for the 50th death, though, is it?
No, not at all, but no. It's part of my portfolio. I mean, not only do I do Jimi Hendrix tours, I do, obviously, Music Legends tours. I mean, I've been running tours now for 3 years. And the first year, you know, I did 25. The second year, I did 130. And back in January, I was about to light the biggest cigar you could ever imagine. Because back in January, I had 50 bookings for April, May and June.
Wow.
And of course, along came the virus and I lost every one of them. But saying that, I've got a tour tomorrow.
Right.
I've had one in August. I've got a couple more in October. So it's beginning to come back. And I think, I think with obviously music not being played live at the moment, this is a very good way of connecting people to music.
And will you be playing Hendrix in the cab as you go
along?
Yeah,
absolutely, Robert. Yeah, no problems at all. And also, it's very COVID secure, you see. So obviously, being in the black cab, you've got the screen.
Yep.
There's hand sanitizers available. I can put on a mask if people don't want to see my ugly face. So it's all very geared to trying to get hopefully helping people to get back into the swing of things.
Stephen, tell people how they can find out all the details of the Jimi Hendrix tour, but all the others as well.
Yeah, it's www.rockcabtours.com. Obviously, my contact details are on the website. You can email me, info@rockcabtours.com. That's a telephone number. And if you ever want to do a tour of it, feel free.
Stephen, it's been an absolute pleasure, sir. That's Rock Cab Tours.